hockey.
Yeah.
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
That's right. Welcome in Judd's Hockey Show, which is back in a weird sort of way, Declan Goff, because the hockey season is over, so it gives us a window of opportunity to talk about Wild-related and hockey-related transactions that might be coming here soon. The Tampa Bay Lightning are a juggernaut. Back-to-back Stanley Cup championships. They beat Montreal, 4-1 in their Stanley Cup final series. And you know what that series did again, Declan Goff? You know what it reminded us of?
Manipulation because of salary cap?
Oh, that too. That's a good one. which, by the way, closed the loophole.
Yeah.
The salary cap has to apply to the playoffs.
One of the dumbest things I've
How do you
seen.
Not apply the salary cap to the playoffs?
Oh, God.
Hey, once the playoffs hit, it's free game. Bring in anyone you want. Bring in re-sign Gretzky for all the National Hockey League cares. No, it reminds us of this, Declan Goff.
Okay.
Beware of rooting for the underdog story. Because the Montreal Canadiens, by the time they got to the finals, were not nearly as much fun as the Golden Knights might have been, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, they just weren't.
Yeah, right.
They played really well. Yeah, exactly.
Would have been better.
And we probably saw the finals more with, like, Colorado-Vegas.
Yep.
But, I mean, Montreal was so spent, and they really weren't that good. Like, it's a good story, but they weren't that good.
It was Carey Price.
That series was not fun to watch, really.
No. I mean, it. You knew that going in. You know, I wanted my Isles to win it in Game 7 against Tampa, but Tampa's a juggernaut.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot more fun to see Vegas there. I think Wild fans would have been a lot more pissed off because now there's just Vigorol and vinegar with the Vegas Golden Knights because they are buying the referees. But, you know, hockey season's over. Now we got a full slate of, well, we got actually more of a jam-packed offseason because it's shorter. But I mean, what, Judd? We're literally 8 weeks from training camp. Or so, a little more.
Because we'll be back in September right? with training camps, and then the regular season will start in early October, and it will be a go. All right, let's get to the primary subject that's going to be triggered immediately now by the end of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah,
that is the fact that the National Hockey League's first buyout window opens 24 hours after the Stanley Cup is awarded, which was obviously late last night. And then closes at 4 p.m. on July 27th. And this is important because if you are watching Judd's Hockey Show right now, you can see this on the screen. This opens up the opportunity, which will, I would guess, start late tonight then and probably take off tomorrow in the a.m.
Yep.
And we are recording this on Thursday for a potential Zach Parise buyout. Now, I think Bill Guerin has stated publicly, and I don't think he's lying, that buyouts are not something he subscribes to and or likes, because it's basically you eat a contract and it can cause problems. And I get that. And you certainly don't want to make buyouts the rule of your team. Like, you don't want to be buying out guys left and right. That being said, Declan, and we could certainly get into the financial implications of this topic as well.
Yeah.
I don't see any way around buying out Parise. Because I think a trade would be incredibly difficult to make because, I mean, I know that he came back and played okay and had, what, 3 goals and something like 4 points in the playoffs. But he was scratched for, what, the first 3 games, a healthy scratch in the playoffs. I don't know how much a team is going to desire to trade for him. My guess is that desire would be very small. And I don't see any way that he can come back here and play with certainly the animosity that built up from him being a healthy scratch and, quite frankly, embarrassed in the playoffs. So unless I'm missing something here, I got to think a buyout is probably, it might not be the most palatable or best option, but it's the best option both sides probably have.
No, it is the best option. I literally think it's the best option. I don't think you can trade him without giving away a first round pick as a sweetener, without giving away something as in, hey, take this, you know, bad apple off our hands, if you will. If he retires early, the Wild still get hit. I think, unfortunately, and I don't like buyouts either. You know, they did it with Mark Parrish. They did it with Thomas Vanek. It lingers for a long time. They did it with Matt Cook. There's been examples, Tyler Ennis, that it just, there's always been dead money against this team for basically the last 15 years. And this one would extend it through 2029, by the way. So we would have a buyout on the books for the rest of this decade if they bought out Zach Parise.
Yep.
And I just think it's the most logical option to do. I know he came in and he scored and he had a little fire under his belly, whatever you want to call it. He scored some goals. I don't look at that series and think if Zach played in the first three games, it's any different than what the outcome was. The way the NHL is trending, the way this team is trending, I don't see where Zach fits in. Like, I don't know how you take away from that series and what the Wild accomplished in the shortened 56-game season and say, well, I think Zach Parise fits into that. I don't. I really don't. So I think a buyout is the most logical thing to do.
Yeah, he's not getting quicker. He is a guy who, and this is actually a credit to him, because of the way he has played, his career is breaking down. And the other thing for anyone who says, well, look at how he came in the playoffs and produced, like you're talking about. The problem there is the brain trust, Bill Guerin, Evason, scratched him as healthy for three games. So that's their statement. Like, it doesn't matter what we think. Uh-huh. We could be the biggest Parise stands, I do love that word, in the world and say, oh, but look at what he did. Look at what he did. And they're going to say, yeah, but we scratched him. And they scratched him because they didn't think that he fit. And so bringing him back to me is not an option, because what's going to happen? You're going to bring him back. You're going to scratch him more. The animosity that builds up is going to actually increase if that's possible.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, Zach is still a guy in that locker room who is popular with a lot of players. So the more you scratch him, the more they're going to look sideways at things. And I'm sure he's not going to just shut up and not say a word about it internally. So, number one, to me, you can't bring him back. Mm-hmm. You just can't. And once they decided to scratch him for the playoffs, that genie out of the bottle. So that's done. Option two would be a trade, but who's going to take on the contract? Like, no one's going to take that contract, right?
Right.
And so, like, you could say, well, we'll give him to you, basically. And a team is going to say, we'll take him. And then you're going to pay a bunch of the contract and you're going to be like, well, we don't want to do that. So, yeah, the buyout, which, by the way, the report that I found here says the Wild can enjoy a $5.2 million savings next season before Parise's cap hit jumps up again for each of the next 3 years due to the nature of his back diving deal, which was what, $833,000? Is that correct on a yearly basis?
So essentially, you'll save the bulk of the money this summer. You'd save 5.2. The next year, it's 1.6. And then the next, is my math here, next 6 years of that deal, you're saving chump change. There's a little negative penalty towards the last 3 years, but it's like $800,000. It's not something that, I mean, over time, yeah, if you add it all up, you know, 800 times five is, you know, that's a few million bucks, but mostly I think it makes the most sense instead of paying him $7 million. So, yeah, so I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And the Wild is now entering a window as well, which I think started to open up in 2020-21. But the Wild now has expectations as well. So, like, you can't afford anything that potentially derails those expectations. And if Zach Parise is not part of the expectations, which I don't believe that he is, Dex, from a management standpoint, it's not like you can afford to have him be a bad apple and unhappy on this team. You've got too many young players. You've come way too far. Like, you think about how Bill Guerin's changed things, right? Which has been a big part of this platform.
Yes.
So you can't just have Zach and be there and be unhappy and be disgruntled and be like, well, that's okay for now. There's not one day of the 2021-22 season, in my opinion, that you can afford to have a former star player be as unhappy as Parise would be because they don't want to pay the price of a buyout.
If you have trust in what Bill Guerin is building here and what he's built so far, and this is really the biggest offseason of his tenure so far, and he's done a pretty damn good job, in my opinion, and then you're upset that he moves on from Zach Parise, well, I have a pretty good trust in what he wants to do here. I'm not trying to say he won't be at fault and he'll make a dumb decision here and there, because no executive or head coach is perfect. But I have a lot of trust in what is being built here. And if he believes Zach Parise, if this team is better without Zach Parise, then I'm going to default to him. Even, I mean, now you and I love to rip people that are smarter than us and better than us and are more athletic than we'll ever even dream of. And that's the beauty of what you and I get to do every day. But I have a lot of trust in what he's building here. And if you're irked by the fact that they're moving on from a 36-year-old guy who's clearly past his prime, mm-hmm. clearly an albatross on you building something special, mm-hmm. and is going to be a problem with him complaining in the room, well, like, what are you really arguing for? What do you argue that because he's Minnesota and he's Zach Parise and he's number 11? Do you think
he can still be Zach Parise, which he can't be?
He can't. You know, Ryan Suter's game hasn't fallen off a cliff yet. Ryan Suter's game could fall on a cliff. Could start this season. We don't know. I don't think it will, but it could. This team is so much better off without him. And what we saw in the shortened 56 games, I don't know how you can come to the conclusion that where Zach then fits into it. I don't see how that works out to me.
And Bill Guerin keeping Zach would fly in the face of everything Bill Guerin has done. Everything. Because he is, again, he has worked incredibly hard to do what Paul Fenton started, which is pick the roster apart, because the roster, it's not that they were bad human beings and it's not that they weren't good players, but as a whole, it didn't work. The puzzle never fit together. And to take the next step, which I think the Wild is in the process right now of doing, like, I like where they're going. I like them. But to take that next step, you can't have a guy who's going to sit in the corner of the locker room who was once great. And look, it's flat out going to cause a division. It's going to cause, if you bring him back, there's going to be the faction of the team, right? That's like, we love Zach. Why is Zach not playing? And Zach's going to talk to them. And then there's going to be the faction of, oh my God, move on. So yeah, I think the buyout is really, unless there's something that I'm missing here from a trade standpoint, I don't think I am. The buyout is the only realistic option. Yule Eriksson-Ek, my man. Yule Eriksson-Ek. I have been surprised that this actually got as much attention from a negative standpoint. Not attention, but the negative attention it got. Last Friday, as we began the 4th of July weekend, signs an 8-year, which thanks to the Parise and Suter contracts, is now the max contract that you can sign to go back to your team. He was a restricted free agent. Eriksson-Ek, 8 years, $42 million. Your thoughts?
Okay, well, first off, I do understand the vigor roll of a max deal for Joel Eriksson-Ek, just from the standpoint of when you think max deal, and when I'm saying max deal, I'm thinking max of the term, how long is he being signed for? It's a hard case to make. There are not many players you would sign to 8-year max deals. Joel Eriksson-Ek does not strike me as the guy who I would first think of to sign a max deal. Mm-hmm. So I do understand that cause for concern. The thing is he has a very affordable cap hit, in my opinion, of 5.2. If this was 6 or 7, I would have pushback. There is no movement clause built in, and I believe there is one, like in year 4, at least a limited one, Michael Russo reported. So there is a possible stipulation for a no movement, or at least a limited one in like year 4
trade.
Of this contract.
Yes.
I could understand
like Dumba has now. Yes.
If it was an ironclad Zuccarello, no movement.
Oh yeah.
I would be pissed.
Agreed.
I'd be a lot more upset.
Agreed on that. Complete no move.
But he blossomed last year. He finally got rewarded for a lot more goals. You know, you asked me in the preseason what player finally starts waking up and scoring more goals, and I said it's going to be Joel Eriksson-Ek just because he's in front of the net a lot more, he does a lot of good things, and he's going to get rewarded. Hockey's one of those sports where if you do all these little things right, eventually the breaks start going for you. And he scored 19 goals last season. He shot the puck more than he ever did. Yeah, shooting percentage was a little high, but he plays all facets of the game. I know there's a lot of people who believe he can still be like a top line center. I don't buy that. I think he's a very good player. What that line did with Greenway and Foligno was a very efficient and productive and needed line for any deep hockey team. I think in general, he still slides in as best case scenario as the second line center on a good team. And he's more likely a very good third line center on any team. And if you're going to get basically, and you know, over 82 game pace, he was damn near a 30 goal scorer. Well, that's it. Like that. I mean, that's the ceiling of him. And there could be some regression there. I understand, but in general, he finally woke up and we kind of, I think, finally realized the Brock Besser comparison. This isn't as bad as we thought it was going to be.
Yep.
You know, I said to you numerous times on previous podcasts that we're going to be linking those two probably forever. And I think we'll probably have those two in a similar conversation for the durations of their NHL careers. But that missed pick or that misevaluation, if you will, from the 2015 draft doesn't look as glaring if you're getting this version of Joel Eriksson next. So I think the contract is fine. Look, we're trying to find another one, and you have one here in Joel Eriksson Ek, and I think it was the right deal to make.
I agree completely. And I actually, so the term did surprise me at first. Like the biggest thing for me to digest was not the financial figure, but it was the term. Because 8 years is the max, and you're like, oh my God, that's a max contract. You know, it's a max contract in terms of the length of the deal. But think about it this way, okay? It's actually a fairly genius structure from the Wilds people in this. Yes, it's 8 years. But one, he plays a premium position. Centers are very hard to find. Very hard to find. The Wild is knows this well. They're trying right now to find more of them. So I'm with you. I think he can be a second line guy. He plays a premium position. And here's where the contract to me makes the most sense. The cap hit per year, $5.25 million, okay? Keep in mind, the cap for a while now, despite the fact this league has a new TV deal with two U.S. partners, this is something I'm confusing me a little bit.
Yeah.
The cap is going to remain, because of the pandemic, this is the sorriest excuse to do it, it's going to remain flat. For quite a few years, right?
No, I think, Judd, it's just for the next 2 seasons.
Okay, for 2 years.
For 2 years.
But the point is, they've got a new TV deal now, so they could have gone up next year a little bit. Long story short, $5.25 million across the board. If Ek is as effective as we think he can be, and by the way, his goal scoring can go down. He's a 200-foot player. He needs to improve himself in the faceoff circle. I will say that. But just as far as what he brings, as far as being a nuisance, right? Teams hate him, which is outstanding. He plays a full ice 200-foot game. He reminds you in some ways, as far as the responsibilities that he picks up, of Koivu, who, by the way, in his prime, to be clear, was damn good.
Yes.
In fact, I don't think Ek is as good as Koivu, which I think you said a couple days ago. But I do think he's a good player. But anyway, if there's regression in goals and points, potentially, that doesn't mean he's become a bad player. I like the cost certainty here because of the position. If he was a left wing or something, I might say, that might be a little dicey. But I think Joel Eriksson Ek for quite a while here is going to be an effective player, and it's not like he's breaking your bank. So I would say don't be as focused on the term, the 8 years, as the financial figure, which is pretty damn fair here. And I think that this is a good investment for a guy who, unless he gets hurt, for probably the next 5 years or so, you're pretty certain of what you're going to get effort-wise.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty certain of what he's going to be. And you know what? If he scores, great. But keep in mind, too, for a long time now, he's going to be the guy that you use against the McKinnons, the McDavids. And far more important than his point total is their point total against you. So I like this move.
Yeah, me too. And look, he's Diet Miko. There's similarities in their games. They both play 200 feet. They both can play penalty kill. I know Joel Eriksson Ek didn't play a ton of the power play, but he started to play more last year. I expect him to play more in the power play this season.
Great.
I think Miko in his prime is a more, and just in kind of in general for the most part, was a more naturally gifted player than Joel Eriksson Ek. Just in terms of the puck, just in terms of creating offense, he was more naturally gifted than Joel Eriksson Ek.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, there's a misconception that Miko, because he was a defensive first forward, was extremely limited offensive. That was not true. I think
the end was ugly, but bad. You're right.
In his prime,
he's good. He's
2000.
Really good.
Yes. 8 to 2014-15,
you're right.
He was a damn good center and had the ability, Angry Miko, as he was coined, could take over a game. You noticed that. I don't know if Joel Eriksson Ek will get to that level and that mindset necessarily. Mindset, yes. Actually, skill, I don't know. But you need a player like this, and if he can develop a little bit more and start scoring more goals and putting himself in good position, yeah, I think he's a damn good center, and he was a fourth place in Selke voting last year. If you just look at...
He could win a Selke.
I mean, if you just look at previous Selke winners, you know, Barkov, Cordier, O'Reilly, Kopitar, Bergeron, Anze Kopitar, like, I don't know if he's going to be able to be that damn good, because those players are, you could make a case, are some of the best centers in, at their position, but he can be one step below them. And yes, I can see him winning a Selkie. He's a good player, and they locked him up, and I think it was the right thing to do.
Nick Bjugstad back on a one-year, $900,000 deal.
Yeah.
I saw a little bit of pushback on this one. I'm, you know what? He can play some center. He can play some wing. I certainly don't love him, but for this salary, I think it's absolutely fine. And you know what? I think that Dino, to start last year, expected a little too much from Bjugstad, and he was probably given opportunities that he wasn't going to thrive at. But I thought by the end that he was doing a pretty good job in the role that he was asked to play. I think this is the type of role player that you need,
mm-hmm.
and he's not going to be a standout. I don't expect it. But as far as a bottom six guy goes, I don't think he's going to kill you. I think it's just fine.
You can't, honestly. This drives me nuts.
Do you think you're going to get stars here, or what's the...
You can't get upset at a guy signing a $900,000 contract, like especially 1 year. If you're pulling your hair out over re-signing a guy because you're seeing, oh, he had like 17 points and he was basically an interchangeable bottom six guy, like you said, Dino tried him out as like the front line, top line center on opening
night, which
was a mistake from the get go.
Yes,
he's a versatile bottom six dude. He started blocking more shots. I think he knows who he's going to be. The guy who he was out of the U of M in those first couple years in Florida, where he was scoring a lot. Injuries piled up, and also I don't mean to rip him for this, and I've heard this from other people from the U and from other hockey smart guys that. I just don't think he wants to be the best. And I don't mean that in a poor way, by the way. I don't mean that as in he doesn't care about hockey.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to, he knows who he's going to be now, is what I'm trying to say. He's still 28 years old. He's not going to be a frontline center and be the dominant player he was at the U of M in those early days in Florida. But if he can be a bottom six guy who can be a center or a wing, block a ton of shots, throw his weight around. He's a big cat. He's 6'6", 200 plus pounds, man.
Can't fight, but he's big.
Yeah, he's a big guy. And if I'm okay with someone signing a 1 year, $900,000 contract.
Is it the thought process that they should have got him for cheaper, or the thought process that they should have waited the market out to get somebody that you think's better? The Nick Bjugstads are the Nick Bjugstads.
The latter. I don't
know if you're going to find one where he scores 25 goals.
I don't get too upset with finding bottom five, bottom six forwards that are making chump change and they know who they are. That's why we like Ryan Hartman so much. No, Ryan Hartman played elevated minutes because of necessity.
Yeah, but he knows who he is.
But he knows who he is.
Yep.
And you never know. I mean, you could make a case that maybe Nick Bjugstad's on the Ryan Hartman trajectory, a former first round pick who probably wasn't going to be as good as he thought he was, but could have a role in this league for a long time.
Ryan Hartman, the difference there is Ryan Hartman wants it more. Bjugstad,
I agree.
Going back to Bjugstad's time with the Gophers, even to go back that far, because I covered him in quite a few games back then. He always looked the part, like you thought, oh my God, this guy's going to dominate. Yeah. And he could at times in college, but there were a lot of times he didn't. And I think he's just wired as who he is, which isn't, he's a talented dude, but I also don't think he has the killer instinct.
Yes.
And Hartman probably does, because if he didn't, he's not in the league. Bjugstad probably gets by on a little bit of talent, but he does have to work. And that's a consistency problem there. I think the two biggest problems that Bjugstad developed as his career, as he spent more time as a pro, the two problems he developed were his desire at times and injury. But I'm with you, Dex. 1 year, $900,000. It's fine. Absolutely fine. And yeah. I mean, if he makes it, he makes it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But it was just, I saw the pushback on that. And I'm like, do people really think that you're just going to go out and Nick Bjugstad, we're going to replace him with whom?
Hey, kids, how's the water?
It's full of weeds.
I can't move my legs.
Your arms are free, right?
Yeah.
Wave them around. It's fun.
You kidding me?
This can't be happening.
This is Jamie from the Aquaside Company. Clear your water completely. Destroy weeds, algae, and the muck that's preventing you from enjoying your waterfront property. We know your time in the water is precious. We're the Aquaside Company. Call 800-328-9350 or visit aquaside.com. State permit may be required.
Yeah, he was throwing more hits around. He was starting in the defensive zone a ton more. Like I said, I think he has a nice role as a bottom six guy. And if you're not overpaying for that, I understand if you're giving 4 to 5 year deals for bottom six. Then let's have a conversation of wasting money. But that's not the case with Nick Bjugstad.
Cap Friendly, by the way, has the Wild right now with $15.9 million in cap space, which brings us to our final topic. How do you feel about what our it almost certainly appears now going to be prolonged negotiations with Kirill Kaprizov, who, to be clear, the Wild has offered a max 8-year contract to, and he is a restricted free agent with no rights, basically, to explain it in the simplest terms.
It's really weird.
He can't go to arbitration. It's not called an RFA, but he doesn't have a contract for next year. But he can't go to arbitration. He can't sign an offer sheet. And the only thing that he can do as far as remaining in the National Hockey League is to come back to the Wild. The Wild offered him an 8-year contract. They obviously would like to lock him up as long-term as possible. Sounds like he would love a 3-year contract because that would walk him right into free agency, which Bill Guerin's no dummy. He doesn't want to do. As far as your friend Kevin Fiala goes, he's also an RFA, and it sounds like negotiations have begun with him. I want to run a thought that I have about Fiala past you in a second, but what's your level of concern, if there is one, about the Kaprizov thing? I think the last time that we talked about this, when Kevin Weeks had just put out his tweet, which, by the way, Guerin has tried to shoot down about, oh my God, he's back in Moscow and he might sign there. Guerin has said, dialogue has not been cut off. We are still talking. And at that time, you were not too concerned. Is there a point at which you're going to be more concerned?
What did I tell you like a month ago or 3 weeks ago when the Kevin Weeks news came down?
DEFCON, you gave me like a...
Well, 1 out of 10. I think I said I'm at like a 3 or 4. I think that's probably moved up to 5. I think it's moved up to 5 out of 10.
Okay.
I think the panic meter has definitely not shifted, has stayed the same or gone less. I think it's definitely panicking more. I get it. Kirill dominated the league, and he's probably, too, got an agent who is saying, man, I know you came into the NHL quote unquote late, but look at what you did. This team has never had someone like this before. You should be asking for the moon. And if you're not going to get the moon, well, let's go short term, walk you up to when you're 27, 28, and then you can cash out. And I understand, you know, that's the politics. That's kind of what it is. You're not going to get Kirill Kaprizov to sign a team friendly deal. Mm-hmm. And he shouldn't. Mm-hmm. He absolutely should not. I would guess, I'm hoping it's at least 4 years. If it's anything less than 4 years, I'd be shocked.
But yeah, three years is an awful sign.
I would hope five years. Well,
I get you're not going to get 8.
Yeah. You're not going to get 8.
4 or 5 to me is where the team is probably going to try and draw a line to not have him become a Ranger in 4 years.
You're not going to get him to 8. If you can get him at 5, great. And this is what I think we first talked about. If you don't win a cup, if you don't contend for a cup in the next 5 years or under the length of that Kaprizov contract, well, again, window. Like, the window right now is open for you to possibly make a run.
Right.
You can't assume. I would love to hope for the next 10 years the Wild aren't just making playoffs, which they've done the previous 10 years, but are making runs at Stanley Cups. I hope that's the case, but I can't assume. Really, over a 2-3 year window. Look at the Minnesota Twins right now. It's a complete disaster after them being the best team in baseball 2 years ago to them falling off a cliff. You can't assume that in sports. So I think if you can get them 4 years, and look, I would pay them $9 to $10 million. I really would. I would pay them up the wazoo.
They're coming in at 8-something right now, if I'm not mistaken from reports.
Yeah. So I can see it being 8 too.
The problem is this. If he gets his way and gets 3 years, the immediate pressure on you to win a cup is enormous. Because if he gets 3 years, now it's go time immediately. Mm-hmm. If he gets 5 years, I could see saying, okay, we certainly should be very competitive in 2021-22 mm-hmm. and then really hit the gas floor in 2022-23, but if it's 3 years, man, it is go time immediately, and that's the problem. So Hopefully it ends up at 4 or 5 years. I don't think he's going back to Moscow.
No, I really don't.
Unless there's behind the scenes stuff we don't know, because we know nothing about this kid, like nothing. But I would just say playing wise, that's not going to be the goal.
I don't mean to bring a question onto you, but I wonder if what's more likely? The Wild, which happens first, I should say, not more likely, which happens first?
Mm-hmm.
The Wild find the center and then ink Kaprizov, or the Wild ink Kaprizov and find the center? Because if I'm the Wild side, I might be heightening my focus to find the center to say, hey, you're not going to play with Ryan Hartman this year. Here's your center. Here's the guy for you to play with. Now let's get your contract figured out. Because if I'm Kaprizov, again, I was playing with Ryan Hartman and I was making him look 10 times better than he ever was. That should be the ploy. If I'm Bill Guerin, I'm trying to heighten my center and find that immediately. I know the number one task is getting these two signed. Internally, that's one and two.
Yep.
But you honestly should focus on finding the center first, because it's probably going to help the Kaprizov negotiations.
And you just ran me right into the Fiala talker that I want to talk to you about. And this is just, it's reckless speculation. It's a sneaky suspicion, okay?
Okay.
So, like, I have nothing to back this up. But you just hit on, because look, Kaprizov's going to come down to term and cash ultimately. Like, if you give him what he wants, he's signing it.
Yep.
But that being said, I have a sneaky suspicion, the more I think about this, that Kevin Fiala is going to be, that there's more evidence to me as far as the momentum here, that Kevin Fiala is going to be the centerpiece of a trade for the position you just talked about, a center by the Wild in the coming weeks to fill what you're talking about.
Reckless speculation.
Which is a Kaprizov line mate.
Yep.
And I know we've talked about this, and I know that you, Declan, have sort of come to accept that this might happen.
Yeah.
But the more thought I give this, doesn't it make sense that if you're going to make this trade right now, and to what you're saying, like let's say Kaprizov, it's about term first, money, or no, it's about money first, term second. Like, let's say that there's a list of Kaprizov himself wish list.
Yep.
Center's on there somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's not on there.
Yep.
And the only way you're going to get the guy that you're talking about is to trade Fiala.
So here's the thing. Here's the conundrum, the Wild face.
I love that word.
And it is a good one. And I think also fans need to recognize this. Here's the assets you have at your disposal to get the center via trade. All right, so we have 3 first-round picks over the next 2 drafts. I'm going to use the next 2 drafts. 3 first-round picks.
Yep.
Matthew Boldy, Marco Rossi,
yep.
Matt Dumba, Kevin Fiala. 7 things. I just listed 7 things.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that will get you, the thing that's the least obtainable giving you, I think, the number one center is, unfortunately, Matt Dumba. I just don't think anyone's going to flip a defenseman for a number one center, and Matt Dumba's value is not as high as we think it is. If it's the opposite of what I'm saying and the Wild are able to do that, great.
Nope.
I just don't think that's the most likely path.
He's a sweetener part of the package, maybe,
mm-hmm.
but he ain't centerpiece.
So that leaves you with the following options to get the center via trade. Fiala, Rossi, Boldy, multiple first round draft picks.
Love how you think.
You're going to alienate and piss off a fan base and possibly some of the people in your organization for mortgaging assets. You can't fleece a trade by just making it pulling a rabbit out of a hat in NHL 2021 with no trade limit on. You have to figure out what are the assets we have, and you have to give up significant assets to get the thing you're looking for. You can't fleece teams. So no matter what, there's going to be a portion of this fan base is that it's going to be upset or at least irked initially by the trade whenever that center comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because Fiala is the established player. Rossi and Boldy are hotshot prospects, and I think they have good futures, but you don't know. You have 3 first-round picks over the next 2 drafts, so those are pretty damn good lottery tickets, even if they're in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to irk some fans with no matter how you spin this trade, because those are the only ways you get the center you're looking for.
You're 1,000% right.
You don't ever say that to me a lot either.
You're 1,000% right. And here's why I think Fiala gets traded. Matthew Boldy is prepared to step into your lineup at the wing this season. Matthew Boldy is under your control for quite some time. Kevin Fiala is an RFA headed towards UFA. And let's say he does a bridge contract. he's going to have to get paid big himself because he puts up enough goals and points and is talented enough to go for a very substantial contract. Meanwhile, you're in a salary cap league. Kaprizov, who you have every intention of keeping for a long time, is going to break the bank, and well, he should. If you trade Boldy, you're trading away a controllable asset who you think is a productive player. If you trade Fiala and let's say at least one of those first round picks, and now let's say you put Dumba in as a sweetener, just something like that. Okay. Cause, and by the way, I'm out on Eichel. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think so.
I think he might go to the Kings. I think he might go there. There are teams that will probably make a trade for him, but they still haven't decided on surgery yet. There's too many variables there that if you're wrong, it's a catastrophe. Like it's a franchise killing catastrophe. So because the price for him is going to be, at least the asking price will be enormous. So let's say you do a trade for a productive center. Let's say it's the kid from Buffalo,
Reinhardt,
who plays some wing, can play wing and center, but he certainly can play center. But let's say it's from that list. Okay. Fiala's a really good return there. Like, yeah. Really nice return. We're not talking about the only trade where you're like, well, you need Fiala and Boldy and a first round pick might be a guy like Eichel. But since I'm out on that, you know, Fiala for Reinhardt or Fiala for a center, a really good one, I think is possible if you include one more sweetener. That's why I think from a financial standpoint, the Fiala portion of the trade actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I don't want to lose.
Because are you really going to let both those guys break the bank? Because if you're, that's a lot. That's a lot going out in a salary cap league where, to your point, it's going to be flat for a few years.
Fiala's in an interesting position too. 2 years ago, his contract negotiations went right up to training camp. Then he had a visa issue, so organization-wise, they were kind of irked by him. He's now changed his ownership, his agency, so he's now got a new owner. He's coming off basically a 100-game sample size of pretty damn productive play, saying,
I'm with you.
I'm here.
Like,
I want my money, and he deserves his money. I think his dynamic, I don't want to lose it. I like to say I'm the warden of the Kevin Fiala fan club because I think there's still misperceptions of him out there, but in general, he's a damn good player, and you need him on your team. That's my conundrum I face is, well, then, all right, if I don't want to lose Fiala, then I'm going to give up Boldy or I'm going to give up Rossi. And the fantasy in people's heads of like, well, I can't because his future is projected. I know what Kevin Fiala is. Odds are Boldy and Rossi, both of them won't develop into the NHL superstars you think they are. One of them might. Mm-hmm. And there's a chance both of them can develop into NHL caliber players for sure. But the odds of both of them being NHL superstar, all-star, perennial award-winning players are low.
Yeah.
And I think people don't understand that because they see them as the projections and they were great in college or they have great pedigrees. That's all true. That's what made them top picks. But the odds are of them turning in to Kirill Kaprizov are slim to none.
Right.
Kevin Fiala might be the actual most competent ceiling for one of those two players. And Kevin Fiala is a good player and I like him, but the odds of both them turning into Kevin Fiala are still low. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at a crossroads.
But if you can get a center who can center Kaprizov and now bring out the best in Kaprizov, so that's a good replacement for Fiala in the sense that you're getting a very productive player. And again, it also comes down to the cap. It also comes down to a salary structure where if Fiala and Kaprizov break the bank, now that's two guys basically making a ton of your salary cap. And Boldy and Rossi, if they develop at all into good players, are under your control for quite some time. That's what I'm saying is I think there's a financial discussion here that probably has to be had about how much you're going to pay these guys. Because you know what? Fair or not, Fiala's going to look at what Kaprizov gets and say, hey, guys, look at my stats.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've been in the league longer.
Yes.
And he's damn talented.
Yes.
So like, I don't think we can dismiss the Fiala ask here.
I don't blame you, man.
And look, there might be a way to make a trade for a center who you like where it's even up, or they might send you a sweetener. So I'm not saying I've got the answer, But I just think this assumption that you're going to sign Kaprizov and Fiala and it's all going to be fine might be a little bit of a reach. And Kaprizov, no doubt, has to be your focus.
Yep.
So.
Wow.
That was a lot.
We went in.
That was a lot. Next time we talk, I want to talk about the expectations that are going to focus on Boldy starting next season.
Yeah.
Because you know who's going to be a special player? Or heck, he's not going to be. He is one. Cole Caulfield.
Oh, yeah. He's already damn good.
Cole Caulfield is a midget. He's a small man. And he made an impact in the playoffs.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Which is a place where, like, Goudreau has disappeared.
Yeah. He's an awesome player.
So that's pretty impressive.
Well, I will say we'll probably tease and we'll be all over it. The expansion draft's 13 days away as we're recording this 21st. Right now on July 8th. So it's July 21st. I'm sure you and I will be all over that. We'll probably do maybe one more protected list and our exposed players and whatnot. And I'm sure we'll get into that maybe next week.
Yep.
And then we'll obviously react to the news. So even though it's the offseason, yeah, like you said, the Stanley Cup ended. This is now Judd's Hockey Show. We're at the appetizers of our offseason.
Training camp's right around the corner, baby.
We're going to be right talking puck again here. So
all
absolutely.
Right. Say your thing.
Pass, shoot, score.